We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. We start the show today with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called X-Clan, and then a piece of music by the group X-Clan called Funkin' Lessons. Then I interview Greg Silva, who's a program director at Addiction Treatment Centers, and wrap up the show with a tune by Drew Stiles called Seven Wonders. Stay tuned!
I would like to speak with you about your being president of Island Records USA. The caller was Chris Blackwell. It was December 1989. At the time, I was leaving the presidency of Chrysalis Records USA, and I was headed to Walt Disney to start a label for them with Peter Paterno, my attorney. I passed on Blackwell's offer because the current president of Island Records USA, Lou Maglio, was a friend of mine. Blackwell told me that Lou had resigned the day before. What he didn't tell me, it was after Blackwell had given him major dollars for his part in the selling of Island Records. Blackwell had sold his Island Records to PolyGram for a reported $300 million. Blackwell was an employee for the first time in his life. He was rich, but he had a boss. With Lou out of the picture of his own volition, I was indeed interested in the presidency of Island Records. I really didn't want to move to Los Angeles. I love New York. I had friends, colleagues, doctors, and a good dentist in New York. I had a great apartment and an even greater weekend home, the Clift House in Mayopac, New York. Chris said we should meet in person. He was in London, but said he would take the Concorde over the next morning to meet with me. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Chris showed up at my apartment the next morning. We worked out a deal. Chris said he had never had a boss before, but he had to run all of this by his boss, something he was clearly uncomfortable with. I had to find an attorney to represent me in a hurry. Obviously, I couldn't use Peter Paterno. The contract was hammered out in 12 hours, something that was unheard of in the day. And the next night, I went to the Island Records office at 4th and Broadway on top of the Tower Records flagship New York store and signed my contract. I remember I had a tremendous cold or the flu. Island had a great roster at the time. U2, all the Bob Marley catalog, Robert Palmer's hits, Kim Bowie had signed Atlantis Driving and Crying, and Cookie Gonzalez had signed a brilliant militant hip-hop collective called the X-Clan. The receptionist called my office to say a man named Lumumba was in the lobby looking to speak with someone in A&R. I had no idea what a Lumumba was, so I went out to see. He had a tape that was very good, so we did a deal for 3 12-inch records for $7,500 each. The 12-inches sounded good, so we did an album for $75,000. The album was projected to sell less than 100,000 copies. It sold 80,000 copies in the first week. We were off to the races, end quote. Cookie Gonzalez. The X-Clan was known for their militant activism as members of the Black Watch movement. We released the X-Clan's debut album, To the East, Blackwards, in 1990. I was down with the brothers, but to be honest with you, I don't think the X-Clan gave a damn what I was down with. They took this militant thing very seriously. The fact that I had Anita Baker's home number meant nothing to these guys. They had their own language. Vainglorious was a word they used a lot. I have no idea what that word meant. They all said zoom and sissy a lot in their records. These words are in a lot of their songs. They also mention the red, the black, and the green in a lot of their songs. These colors were the colors of the Pan-African flag. Each color had symbolic meaning. Red stood for the blood, both the blood shed by the Africans who died in their fight for liberation and the shared blood of the African people. Black represented, well, black people. And green was a symbol of growth and the natural fertility of Africa. Like I said, these guys were hardcore. They had something to say and a position from which to say it. X-Clan had a very loyal following that dressed in red, black, and green. They had some very cool looking leather red, black, and green headgear. The most devoted fans carried large African staffs about 6 feet long that were carved in various African motifs. These fans, male and female, would strike the floor with their staffs and shout the word Zoom simultaneously. It was impressive. For obvious reasons, I don't think we could call these X-Clan fans Klansmen. They, the fans, scared the hell out of me, a white boy from Macon, Georgia with a southern accent. The leader of the X-Clan was Professor X, the overseer, born Lumumba Carson. Lumumba was big, probably 280 pounds, and he had a big ring through his nose at a time when you didn't see that sort of thing. At least I didn't see it a lot. Lumumba was an angry young man. If he wasn't angry, he did a damn good job of projecting that image. As president of the label, I had several meetings with Lumumba, Brother Jay, and Sugar Shaft, and the other members of the band. They wanted to go on tour, and they wanted tour support. Fine with me. They came into my office in full X-Clan regalia. Red, black, and green clothing with staffs. It was impressive. Cookie was there to help me represent the label. All good. Once on the road, there were some problems. As it turns out, Cleveland was not as vainglorious as Brooklyn. The word got back that the members of the X-Clan were unhappy. Sure enough, next week, 4 delegates from the X-Clan in full red, black, and green regalia marched into my office with no appointment and demanded that I attend the meeting with Professor X, the overseer, Brother Jay, and Sugar Shaft on neutral territory. They didn't want to come into my office. I had to go to them. They were in their tour bus parked outside the office. Okay, fine with me. Let me put on my suit jacket. I took Cookie with me. When we stepped out into the street, there were 30 X-Clan fans dressed in red, black, and green with their staffs all striking the pavement and shouting Zoom simultaneously. The X-Clan fans formed two lines that we had to walk between. It was a gauntlet. Zoom! 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 They were saying, Zoom! I was hearing, get that honky! Zoom! Get him! Thank goodness I had put my suit jacket on. The Tower Records shoppers were glued to the windows wondering what in the hell was going on out on 4th Street. We got into the front lounge of the X-Clan tour bus, which, I might point out, the record company had paid for, and they started to complain about the sound system and various other things that were not really in the control of the record company. We sat and listened. The complaints were getting louder and louder, and the language was becoming more and more strident. At this point, the bus driver started the bus. That big Cummins diesel engine rumbled to life, and I thought for a minute I was being kidnapped and taken to God knows where and killed for poor stage monitors in Detroit. As it turns out, the driver was just starting the engine to turn on the air conditioner. Thank God, because I was sweating like a whore in Sunday school. It was in this bus meeting that I was introduced to Lumumba Carson's father, Sonny Carson, now the X-Clan's manager. Great, I thought, a leader of the band's father is going to manage the band and he has no experience in the music industry. Sonny sat through the entire meeting without saying a word. He was not dressed in red, black, and green. He did not carry a staff. He looked like a normal middle-aged man. Cookie and I made it out of the neutral ground X-Clan bus meeting, walked back through the X-Clan fan gauntlet, zoom, 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 and made it back into our offices. Whew. Sonny Carson called the next day and asked if he could have a meeting. Absolutely. We scheduled a meeting the following day, and I set out to find out who was Sonny Carson. I was told he was a former Black Panther. This was not true. He was a former gang member. He was a Korean War vet serving with the 82nd Airborne. 80 deuce. That impressed me. He had served a stretch in New York's Sing Sing prison. He was ardently anti-drug. When he was accused of anti-Semitism, he stated, quote, "That is absolutely absurd. Anti-Semitic? And so that you don't ask the question, I'm anti-white. I don't limit my antis to just one group of people," end quote. At least I knew where I was in Sonny's life. There was literally a movie made about this man entitled The Education of Sonny Carson. In short, Sonny Carson was not someone to trifle with. I was ready when Mr. Carson came into my office the next day. A mild-mannered, soft-spoken man came into my office. He was upfront about the fact that he did not know that much about the music business. He did say that he was interested in what I had to say. I was floored. No red, black, and green, no carved staff, no use of manufactured words, just a normal business meeting with a concerned father. He did not say Zoom once. Over the next month or so, I had several meetings with Sonny Carson. We developed sort of a friendly relationship, or certainly a relationship of mutual respect. One morning, Sonny walked into my office for a meeting regarding tour support, and I handed him an X-Clan cassette that I'd purchased on the street on my walk to work that morning for $5. Sonny questioned why I was giving a cassette to him. I told him to take a look at it. He did. He took the cassette out of the box. He removed the paper J-card and looked at it. He asked, "What's the big deal?" I told him the cassette was a bootleg. Someone other than 4th and Broadway Island Records was manufacturing and selling his son's band's cassettes. Sonny's eyes narrowed and his brow became furrowed. Sonny knew immediately that the X-Clan was not being paid a royalty for these bootleg sales, nor were these sales calculated for the band's chart position. He may not have known the music industry, but he knew business. Sonny asked where I had bought this bootleg cassette, and I told him, at the corner of Astor Place and Broadway, one block from the X-Clan's record company office. You could actually see the vendor from my office window. At that point, steam was coming from Sonny's ears. Sonny asked if he might borrow a phone to make a call. "Sure," I said. I could not hear everything he said, but I did hear the phrase, Astor Place and Broadway. Sonny hung up the phone, and we went back to reviewing the tour budget. About 15 minutes later, I could hear sirens and a loud racket. The feces was being thrown in the air circulator at Astor Place and Broadway. There were four police cars and an ambulance there. Sonny and I went over to the window to see what was going on. There were cassettes all over the street. Sonny said, quote, "That guy will not be selling any more bootleg X-Clan cassettes," end quote. I approved every penny of that tour support budget.
Freedom or death, ye shall all be moved. Vainglorious, this is protected by the red, the black, and the green with the key city.
Abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logical, mythological. They couldn't comprehend when I brought the word, a stick called verb, a black steel nerve, teaching those actors and actresses who write a couple lines on what black is. Really? Then they label me a sin when a brother just speaks what's within. I guess I'm blacker than the shadow in the darkest alley that they're always scared to go in. Boo! I wear boots and beads, bags and braids, stick and scroll, rings and shades, walk in the light of the moon, but I've never been a Batman. African, call it black man. Brother, extracts the African steps in your movements, enhance for improvements. Grand funk, a new home for the phrase, funk and lesson the pathway.
Ready or not, here we come, getting down on the one which we believe
in. Can I get in on the good foot to the dawn?
Let me tell you about blackness, grits and cornbread. How can you act this? I exist on a plane where the jar is my brain. I'm living to retrieve cell, antenna my stick, picture bigger, native liquor figure. The pull of the trigger goes zoom, not boom. Not a bunch of sissies, but saviors braver. The red, black, and green is just so much more than red, black, and green. You ask what I mean, but yet the sundown shades and life's a dream. Watch too late, oops, upside your head. You drop through abyss like lead. Where you going? What's your speed? What's your pleasure? What's your need? Trees and branches, roots and seeds, forwards, backwards, many degrees. Questions, answers, what's the sum? We have come.
Out of the darkness in panther skin comes doctors driving pink caddies, bearing the remedy to your existence. Yes, it gets blacker with a Nat Turner lick. Martin, Adam, Malcolm, Huey, there's a party at the crossroads.
Milk, a stool and a bib, be filled of the black sap from the tri-womb. It flows freely on a tune. Wheat bread, taste the jam. Come take a stroke to the rhythm of the grand. Verbalizer coming from the temple of void. Crown for my hat, man for my boy. Onward ride as I talk of Ra. Converse with Horus, create with Tar. I ride to Jeb, to roar with Bass. Aton to Mu as I ride the raft. Roof of the world I sit, cross-legged, right over left. Drums of dance to drums of war. Who knows the score? Speak no more. Who watches down with the eyes of black to the east blackwards?
This is a chance. This is a chance.
It's July 16th, 2021. I have in studio Greg Silva, who is the director of operations for three different treatment centers. And today we're going to talk about drug use and treatment. And you're an expert in this area. Well, tell us
Correct.
About yourself.
I'm like a reluctant expert, I guess. My background is, I mean, I've worked in business my whole life, and I spent a lot of time overseas. And I had a really good friend who was on drugs. I didn't know, and I didn't know how to help him. Once I found out, he house sat my house and my dogs for me while I was gone, and I knew he needed help. I knew he needed some kind of treatment, but I didn't know how to go about it, and my life was busy, and he ended up committing suicide in my garage one day when he was house-sitting for me when I was about to leave for Europe. And anyway, it was a mess. It took me a couple of years to figure it out, but I finally ended up working in treatment, kind of kismet, and I found my place. I felt such guilt, and I just didn't know what I was doing back then as far as, you know, running across a friend or a loved one with drug or alcohol issues. And this really hit home. It was really hard. It really, you know, I still have a lot of issues around it. But anyway, working in treatment helps me. I know now how to help people. I know how to get them into treatment. I know what it means to them and their families to actually have them get clean and sober. And so I try to help people when I didn't know how to get help. Anyway, I think I found my spot.
And you put programs together.
Yes.
You manage centers.
Yes.
That help people. And so you put the whole package together, because when you're in a treatment center, well, you're getting fed, you're getting therapy, you're getting art or beauty. Like, there's a lot to it.
There is a lot to it. It takes a village, as they say. But we have therapists, psychologists, doctors, MDs. We have a whole array of professionals that specialize in addiction care and treatment. Everyone's different, so, you know, we have different specializations. Certain people specialize in different kinds of treatment specialities, so to speak.
So some people may respond to talk therapy, another person to dance therapy, another person to just soaking in a hot tub.
Correct. I know your show and I know your audience. I mean, I think it's important to talk about mind, body, and spirit when we talk about treatment. That's something that kind of lacks in a lot of people's programs. And maybe now it's just really starting to catch on. But people understand now that drug addiction really is, and alcohol addiction, any kind of addiction really, a lot of times is tied to some kind of trauma in one's past. There is something mentally that has affected your mental health, that has happened to you in the past, that affects your ability to be and stay sober. People go out and take a drug or take a drink, and it makes them feel better momentarily, and it quiets their brain, and it, in the short run, it helps them feel better, but in the long run, it becomes a bigger nightmare than their original problem. That's where we come in.
My understanding is that drug addiction, almost any kind of addiction, is to do two things for the person. Either relieve pain, and that could be physical pain, back pain, and you get on OxyContin,
sure,
or emotional pain, relieving pain. Mm-hmm. Or because you're bored, because you want something exciting, you want something to do that makes you feel more engaged in life.
That's
so life has more meaning. So this is my understanding. And if we get to the underlying causes, if we can relieve the emotional or physical pain, or give people ways to feel their life has more meaning, sometimes the addictive behaviors just go away. I mean, am I at all in the right direction?
You're right on target.
And okay, you're going to hire me.
We can tie this into the COVID pandemic. The rates of drug and alcohol use during the pandemic have gone up exponentially during the last year and a half. Women and alcohol, for one thing, that was normally something we'd see more skewed towards men. Women have been abusing alcohol at the highest rates. That's something that's really happened during COVID. People are, you know, sitting with themselves, bored, just sitting at home, and they start, you know, having a drink. You know, we watch the news every day. You see things that in the last year and a half, 2 years, that really give you anxiety. So what's better to help you with anxiety? Let's have a little drink. And the next thing you know, I'm having a half a bottle of wine. The next thing you know, I'm having a whole bottle of wine. So that just something that kind of happens.
So here's two things. One, there's the emotional pain of fear, insecurity, mm-hmm. anxiety. Am I going to get sick? Or we're in the middle of a plague. And also boredom. People want something to do, so I'll have a drink. Well, what other kinds of addictions do you see these days? What's coming in?
The biggest one is the opioids right now. There is a pandemic when it comes to drugs, including opiates. Fentanyl is what you'll hear a lot on the news and things like that. It used to be heroin. Heroin's still big. Fentanyl has replaced heroin because fentanyl is much cheaper. It's easy to get. It's manufactured in Asia, mostly China. It comes over in shipping containers and across the border, you name it, and it's on the streets, and it's not regulated at all. These guys are, and girls are, fixing it into syringes, giving themselves an injection, and dying immediately. You'll hear stories about how kids at one party, there'll be 8, 10, 12 kids that all OD'd and died at one party because of fentanyl.
And it's like 100 times more potent than heroin.
Correct. And it's not regulated, so you might get one pill that is a certain strength and you're used to it, and then you might go get a pill, it may look exactly the same, and you take it and you're dead because the, you know, it could be 10 times stronger and you didn't know it. It's very, very dangerous. And the other one is like morphine, codeine. Those are the old, you know, old-fashioned ones. People would get prescribed those things. And oxycodone, Percocets, you know, street names like that. They are things that are very, very addictive. Doctors were prescribing them like crazy, you know, 5-10 years ago. And there's been a huge crackdown. So these people are still addicted. They still want that high. So they'll start stealing them out of parents' medicine cabinets. They'll go to their grandparents and rifle through, you know, their things, and they'll find their pills. And that's one way to get it. But then when you run out of those kinds of options, there's heroin out on the streets. It's easy to get heroin. There's even ads on Craigslist that have special types of wording that if you're in the know, you'll know exactly how to get something in your city or even small town just by going on Craigslist. It's very dangerous, and we do everything we can to fight this. I mean, we're here kind of fighting an uphill battle, but we have to be here. We have to do it.
And so in Los Angeles right now, do you feel like that's one of the most serious addiction problems?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All over the country. Fentanyl and heroin are two of the biggest ones out there that we see a lot. We also
opiates. That's what it is.
Another thing we see a lot of is meth addiction. Meth addiction goes in waves, and we see a rising tide of methamphetamine use. It has a really strong connection in the LGBTQ plus community. So we get a lot of LGBTQ plus peoples who are looking for treatment that have been using meth and their whole life has fallen apart because of their meth use.
Sometimes people don't know that a friend or loved one is addicted, but then there's this whole cluster of behaviors that come along. There's lying or deception or not doing the things you say you will do. So what do you see happening to people's lives?
Well, we get a big influx of calls to our centers right after Thanksgiving and Christmas, because those are the holidays that families typically are together. So mom and dad may not have seen their son or daughter for a few months, and then when they come for the holidays, they notice, you know, the slurring of words or whatever signs. There's tons of signs out there that
something wrong.
Yeah, you can just tell. You know, when someone that you care about and you know intimately and deeply, you know, husbands and wives, there's, you know, they'll drink behind each other's back. You know, partners will have addictions that, you know, the other partner doesn't know about as well. But something will happen. They'll find it in their car. They'll find it in a drawer hidden, you know, under some t-shirts. You know, mothers put their kids' clothes away. Fathers put the laundry away and see it in their child's, you know, cabinet or whatever. So there's just ways to see it. Weight loss, dilated pupils. There's a lot of telltale signs. Out of money, asking for money.
Stealing money.
Lost a job, you know, stealing money when it gets down to it. Jewelry goes missing, you know. There's ways that you know that someone in your life is using.
You work for three centers, which are?
Okay, so we have two out in the Palm Springs area. One is Living Longer Recovery, and the other is Gravity. And then we have one in Encino Hills called New Spirit Recovery. They all three treat drug and alcohol issues, addiction, but we specialize, we have separate tracks of treatment for different, you know, issues. So for instance, at Living Longer Recovery, we have a whole mind, body, spirit program where we have yoga, we have natural mineral baths, where we have a hot water well where water comes out of the ground into these really gorgeous tubs, and people detoxing will use that, and it helps them detox faster, helps them feel better sooner. And then we have the other one in the Palm Springs area, gravity treatment. We get a lot of people who have chronic relapse issues, so they may have been to treatment 6, 8, 10, as much as 40 times actually. And we have specialists there that help people with that relapse prevention, finding out what triggers them to use once they've been through treatment, try to get the patients to recognize what those triggers are and how to change or avoid those triggers. And then in Encino, we're up in the hills there, and it's just a gorgeous, very private property. We get a lot of professionals that are looking for privacy, anonymity, who still want to continue contact with the outside world, whether they need to be on the internet to do business or on a phone. We help facilitate that so that they're able to get the treatment they need, but also they don't have to drop everything in their life. You know, they keep going so that when they're done, they can step back into their business world.
So there are a lot of options for people depending on the particulars of their situation.
Yes.
Are you getting people in the midst of a crisis, or what stage are you seeing people?
Yeah, I think I understand what you're talking about. There's certain levels of care. What we do is the most difficult. It's the initial phases, which are detox and residential phase. The detox and residential phase usually take about 30 to 45 days, and it's an inpatient treatment. So you stay with us, you get your, you know, a room, meals, and then basically 7 or 8 hours of treatment a day with therapists and group therapies and individual therapies and things like that. Our place is not a horrible place to be. People think of treatment sometimes and they think, oh God, it's going to be like locked up in jail. It's not like that. People are free to leave. If they decide this isn't for them, they can leave. But mostly they stay. The first 7 days are pretty tough because they're detoxing through whatever illegal substance or legal substance for that matter that they're on. We help them with MAT, which is medically assisted treatment. So they may get some medication, say Suboxone for an opiate. Suboxone is a drug that kind of lessens the withdrawal symptoms. They can be on a taper where they're taking those medications while they are completely detoxed off the, you know, heroin, for instance. And then from there, there's a lot of assessments that are done, including mental health checks and assessments, things like that. If medications need to be prescribed for mental health help, we can do that. We find a lot of people in treatment that are abusing substances are doing it because they are either on the wrong medications or not on medication at all. And once we can find out what that initial voice that's going on in their head, that, you know, if we can get that quieted and get them centered, we find that the addiction lessens or goes away.
I see. Do you try to get to the underlying causes?
Of course. And that's called dual diagnosis. So it's most people that we get are dually diagnosed. So there is some type of mental health issue going there, whether it's deep-seated trauma, sometimes trauma they don't even hardly remember. We get a lot of people that have had some kinds of psychological or sexual abuse. It could have happened when they were very, very young, and they just don't know why. They just can't get over feeling the way they feel. And with some really intense therapy, psychotherapy, the right medications, we can get the brain chemistry right. And when that happens, everything else starts to fall into place.
So you just try to get them over the crisis moment.
Correct.
When they get a little stabilized on their own 2 feet, then you can back them off medication and stuff. And
correct.
And you have to get them in a stable position.
Correct.
Over the chaos of
correct.
It.
Correct. And not just, yeah, not just mentally stable, physically stable. There's a lot of side effects to detoxing off, say, liquor. Alcohol is one of the worst to detox off of.
Tell me about that.
People can have seizures. There's all kinds of things that can happen. And
liver damage.
Well, and that's a kind of a long-term thing that happens over time, cirrhosis. But if you're drinking a certain amount of alcohol a day and then you quit cold turkey, you can have some very serious reactions, like severe tremors. Or I mean, there's just lots of side effects from alcohol. And there are medications, that short-term medications that will help avoid those kinds of things, seizures being the hardest thing to kind of get over. So
seizures.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot to
this.
You
will see if you are drinking a lot and you stop immediately. I mean, one of the most famous ones lately is Amy Winehouse. She was a severe alcoholic and she died that way.
So your body gets habituated to these drugs, and then if you just yank them away, the body starts to freak out.
Yeah, and people are obviously they know what's going to happen. There's lots of substance abusers out there who've tried to stop themselves. You know, I don't need treatment. I don't need professionals. I can just do this on my own. And they get day three or four into it, and they're like, oh, you know, forget this. I feel too awful. I need something. And they'll go back to it. Or we'll have people that say, well, I'm not going to do heroin, but I'm just going to smoke marijuana. And then pretty soon, you know, they're smoking tons of weed and they're back on their drug. Marijuana is very controversial. I don't want to open that can of worms on their show. Yeah. That's a whole new show on its own.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is actually marijuana therapy out there. People are using marijuana to detox patients, to use for detox. We don't do that yet, and it isn't accepted by any insurance companies, but
marijuana therapy,
it's out there.
I have very mixed feelings about marijuana, just to cause some little stir here. I mean, it's like being promoted by a lot of people as some miracle drug and a problem solver, and this, I mean, it certainly has medicinal uses. But it's also a very it's a drug.
It's a drug. You know,
let's just call it what it is. And if you're smoking every day, you're a drug addict.
Yeah. And here's the really kind of sad thing. I have tons of statistics and I don't want cliched things I could say, but I don't want to bore your audience with that kind of stuff. But what marijuana does to someone whose brain is still developing, and there's a lot of data on that, and it's not great, you know.
When you're a teenager.
Yeah, and, you know, these teenagers.
So no wonder why I'm so screwed up.
11, 12, 13, I know, right? Are you a child of the 70s?
Back, thank you, thank you, thank you.
60s, oh, wow, well. You got the good stuff back
then. Yeah, Lumbo.
But kids think, oh, this isn't a big deal, and they get it. Their parents share it with them. They think it's not a big deal. They do edibles because edibles, you know, I guess maybe if it's not smoke and you're just eating it and it's candy, it's not that big of a deal, but it is. It affects you. It affects them, and it affects their cognitive development.
Let's talk a little about drug use and specific communities.
There are different groups who have different slants on this whole addiction thing. I think I mentioned LGBTQ plus community. 6.3 million LGBTQ plus adults have had a substance or a mental abuse disorder or both, double the population from average of LGBTQ plus use drugs or alcohol. It's a different drug, you know. It's meth a lot. It's GHB. It's ecstasy. But also we see heroin and fentanyl and things like that. And it's just sad to have a community that went through the AIDS crisis and lost so many incredible souls, so many people that had such bright futures. And then to see this new generation right now that are abusing drugs and killing themselves basically over this new wave of addiction is really sad. And then that gets into, you know, these drugs, you lose your inhibition. So these kids are still catching HIV at an alarming rate, where it doesn't have to be that way. You know, we if we keep our wits about us, we do things safer and differently. These kinds of drugs, especially meth, lower inhibitions. It's really sad.
I remember in the 1970s going to gay dance clubs, that's where the action was. And on the dance floor, people would be inhaling, they call them poppers, amyl nitrate, I think it's called. So there was like a lot of, well, there was a lot of drug use in the 70s, but I think particularly in the gay community. And so is that now more of the trauma these people are undergoing, just the pressure on this community in general, is a heavier emotional load than the rest of the society carries.
Correct.
So there's going to be more drug use.
Yeah,
they're attacked more.
There's tons of trauma. I mean, whether it's from your parents or family. I mean, we're of a certain generation. I think maybe it was a little different growing up for us, but the younger community, they seem more adjusted and things like that, but there is just, there's always going to be trauma. You know, you're going to get called names. You're going to get, you know, picked on, and you're, you know, there are parents that don't understand. There are kids that get kicked out of the house at 14 or 15 because their parents, you know, they come out of the closet, they end up on the streets. And the next thing you know, they're, you know, kind of doing these kinds of things that are so dangerous to them, and too many die.
So then, extrapolating, I'm sure every minority community that's being bullied, that's being picked on, that's having a harder time getting housing or jobs or promotions, there's a lot more stress on these communities, and then you're going to probably find more addiction, whether it's more socially acceptable through alcohol or the more underground drugs that you're talking about. Is this a fair conclusion? If you're under more pressure in society in general, it's going to show up someplace.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's it's not brain surgery, right? It's just that, you know, it is what it is. And
if you want to solve the addiction problem, solve the underlying problems that are affecting these
exactly. You have to hit it. You know, it's a two-headed monster, I guess. The mental health aspect and the drug abuse thing. I mean, you have to hit both at once. You have to get them off the drugs. You have to detox them, make them feel safe, and get them to feel better, and then work on the mental health stuff along with the addiction, so that you know, when they leave us, hopefully they go on to a lower level of care. That can be sober living. That can be just groups and classes where you do that remotely or on via Zoom. There's all kinds of things you can do eventually to keep your kind of head in the game, so to speak, as far as staying clean and sober. But there's so many options once you get your feet under you, as far as meetings and support and things like that.
Some of the larger arcs of these addiction problems can only be solved societally. In other words, when large groups of the population are under a lot of emotional, psychological, economic pressure, there's going to be lots of people who are struggling with addiction in those communities, and even youth who are taking a lot of drugs. Well, if they're feeling alienated and there's no meaning to life, and there's all kinds of pressure, yes, they're going to be taking a lot of drugs. So the answer then is providing solutions for youth and options and things to do and work and so forth. Then you solve the underlying problem. Yeah. See, I get very big with these things very quickly. Okay, but go ahead.
The big message I want to get out here is, if you know people out there are suffering from addiction, or your loved one is suffering from addiction, what steps do you take? You know, what can you do? So anyway, you mentioned the military. Yes, tons of military that come out of the service and have PTSD and lots of trauma. You know, there's higher divorce rates, things like that. There's drugs that they turn to. We have an older population now. They're drinking a lot. I mentioned earlier, women are drinking way more than they ever have. And that is linked to so many other diseases besides alcoholism. You know, we have breast cancer, things like that, that there are certain, you know, ties to that. Heart disease, things like that. So there's not really a population that doesn't have their subset of people that need help with addiction.
Fair enough.
Parents are seeing kids back from college or in high school even, that they recognize, hey, something's wrong. My child's completely different. Their personality has changed. I can't chalk it up to hormones. It's something bigger. And, you know, they may have crashed a car. They may have stolen something from you or something like that. You know that there's a problem. And the question I get is, then what do I do? Once I know I or someone I know has a problem, where do I go from there?
What's the costs of this to society in general? What we just kind of want to ignore the problem so it goes away, but We're paying for this.
I can hit you guys with more statistics. $193 billion was incurred in overall costs for illegal drugs, in addition to $78.5 billion for prescription opiates in the last year.
So enormous amount of money and resources.
577,794 emergency room visits occurred for non-fatal drug poisoning or overdoses.
So solving the problems that we were talking about, the underlying problems, would probably be a lot cheaper
financially
than solving the drug problem.
It cost us, cost society a fortune, basically.
So stupid, so short-sighted. Yeah. Let's not deal with the problem, and then we double deal with it.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it seem like drug and alcohol is something anyone really chooses for themselves. It comes on so slowly that the next thing you know, you're addicted, and it is a disease. I tell people all the time, like, don't be embarrassed about this. They come in and they're like, I can't believe I'm here. Can't believe I am in a 30-day treatment. That's only for, you know, people like Stevie Nicks. You know, we don't want to be in treatment, and we don't want people to know. But I said, you know, if you had cancer and you had to go to, you know, Cedars-Sinai, and they kept you for a month to get you healthy and get you back on your feet, would you be embarrassed about that? And no, of course they wouldn't. So this is no different. This is just a life or death situation. It just happens to be substance abuse.
It's a health problem.
It's a health problem.
There's a lot of stigma around it.
Correct.
That leads to the question, how do corporations deal with this? I mean, they don't want drug users on their payroll.
Yeah, there are some industries that have high rates of drug and alcohol use, like the airlines. They get a lot of people that that end up failing drug tests at work, and they get fired. Hopefully, companies realize that it's much less expensive to send a trained, good employee through treatment and let them come back to work, then fire them and try to start from scratch with a new employee. And we're getting the word out about that. But, you know, if you've trained a business professional to do a good job, and basically they do a great job, but they just have this addiction, it really makes sense financially to let them get treatment. If you have good insurance, that usually will cover it. And go get yourself clean and sober, and then come back to work.
So if we put down the moralizing and judging these people and just see this as a health problem, then we can help people who stumbled along the way in
Correct.
Life.
And treatment really is the way to go. I've heard people say, oh, I can get sober on my own or whatever. Maybe some can, but statistics really do show that the longer you can be in treatment, the longer you get that message and those lessons spoken to you over and over and over, the higher your chance for long-term sobriety.
Because it can be grueling on your own. It's grueling even if you're in program, but you have all these support systems with professionals who know what they're doing.
We have case managers that basically help you to kind of plan out the next, you know, year or two of your life. We get people that come in that have never graduated from high school. We can help them get their GEDs. We have people who fell out of the workplace because they just weren't able to function, who end up, you know, we help them with their resume. We have people that like to hire from our pool of, you know, patients who come through. They know they're dedicated and they want to do well. and they hire them and they end up with great jobs. And we have a lot of people that leave treatment who come back to us in a couple of years that say, hey, this changed my life, and how can I help other people? I want to go to school. I want to get my license. I want to become a facilitator. How do I work in treatment? So that's amazing. Probably over half of our employees are people that have long-term sobriety, 15, 20 years of sobriety, that are there, you know, not because they're going to make $1 billion, but because they want to help other people. They want people to see the light like they did.
So I would compare it to if you had a cataract, you could just take an X-Acto knife and try to cut it out yourself, or you could go to a surgeon who's done it 1,000 times and knows what he's doing and makes sure you're going to get your sight back.
Let's make it more visually appealing for our audience. Dr. Pimple Popper, you can pop your own boil, but I'd rather have Dr. Pimple Popper do it because she knows what she's doing. It's kind of the same thing. It's there's professional. You need a professional.
It's a difficult, hard journey, and get some real professional support from people who've done this over and over and over again. So how do people specifically find you and one of your programs?
Our treatment facility, the three of us, we actually take insurance. We have we take a PPO type of insurance that covers most of the patients who come to us. There's also state insurance. There's treatment centers that accept Medi-Cal, Medicare, things like that. And I can give those numbers if you have Medi-Cal or Medicare or some kind of government insurance. You can call a national helpline. It's 1-800-662-HELP. That's 800-662-4357. That is a substance abuse hotline. It's free. It's confidential. It's open 365 days a year. And they're going to help you find treatment with your type of government health insurance. If you were to have a PPO type of insurance, a private insurance, you could reach out to us, and we're at 833-244-5900. Again, that's 833-244-5900. Or you can go to livinglongerrecovery.com, and that's livinglongerrecovery.com. for our website, which also has a lot of information about how you might recognize symptoms of drug or alcohol abuse and where to turn actually if you need help. The 800 number goes right to an admissions coordinator who will talk to you about, you know, what issues you might be having. They'll do a pre-assessment. We get a lot of clients who have suicidal ideations. They've just reached the end of the line. We can pass them along to immediate care for mental health, or if it's appropriate, we can bring them right in for treatment. And we get people from all over the country that come to us. If you are suffering from drugs or alcohol yourself, or loved one, please reach out. You can call us anytime. We're here to help. We can refer you any place you need to go. We can help you talk you through how to breach the subject with a loved one. The word intervention comes up a lot, but there is a way to confront loved ones. I see parents that basically, I don't want to sound horrible, but kill their children with love because they're always slipping them money. They're doing things, you know, dad says, let's cut them off, and, you know, they have to get clean. And moms feel sorry because, you know, kid's crying, needs money, doesn't have money for gas, blah, blah, blah. She's handing them $20 bills, and they're going right to the park, and they're buying fentanyl, and they're taking fentanyl, and they're dying. So we can give a little coaching on how to give some tough love and how to get people to understand that they need this help, and this short 30 to 45 days out of their life is going to change the rest of their life.
So there's a way to do things. There's a way to confront loved ones and do it right so you don't make the situation worse.
Exactly. And it's not that people don't want to do the right thing. They think they're doing the right thing. But you have got, you know, rock bottom is such a cliche word, but you've got to make these people understand that they either need treatment or they're on their own, because I can't help you walk into the grave.
It's a complicated situation. It's a life or death situation. answers are not easy, but there are people who've walked this path before and can really help guide. Greg Silva, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
1, 2, 3. I got a new tambourine. Yeah. It's silver, gold, and green. It's got this jangling ring and it brightens up my thing. So much that it's had to say. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say. Open up your ears and get to see one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say, yeah. Open up your heart and get to be one each and every day. I took a walk by the shore. Oh man, that river shall flow. It's got this swooshy swag, it sweetens up my swag. So much that it's had to say. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say. Open up your ears, you get to see one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say, yeah. Open up a heart, you get to be one each and every day. I wrote this song here today, yeah. It wrote itself, I should say. Ooh, yeah. It's by a false little man and he falls from land away. So much that he said to say, hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say. Open up our ears and get to see one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say. Seven wonders in the world, they say. Open up our heart and get to be one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say, yeah, yeah, yeah. In the world, they say. Open up our heart and get to be one each and every day. Seven wonders, they say, say, yeah, 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 yeah. In the world. Open up your heart, you get to be one each and every day. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Mystic Pete Chronicles. We started today's show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called X-Clan, and then heard a tune by X-Clan called Funkin' Lessons. Then I interviewed Greg Silva, who's a program director at Addiction Treatment Centers, and just wrapped it up with a tune by Drew Styles called Seven Wonders. Just search social media for Drew Styles and look for a guy with bright red hair. A great local musician. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media.
Thanks so much for listening. Mystic P.L.